From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the first day of June 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. University of Illinois Extension agronomist Emerson Nafziger will be here to talk about the dry conditions across the state of Illinois and what it really means for the growing corn crop. And Daryl Good will put it all into perspective with his view of new crop corn and soybean pricing. As we go through the day, we'll talk with Sean Powers. He's with Illinois Public Media, and we'll update the agricultural news for the afternoon, and we'll finish out the program with an agricultural weather forecast from Illinois State climatologist Jim Angel. It all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago, on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. In the nearby contract, we'll give you the last trade for the day, which happened at 2 o'clock for the July soft red winter wheat, down 31 and a half cents at 612 and a quarter. September there at 630 and three quarters, down 30. The hard red in Kansas City at 637. A settlement price was down 28 cents. Back to the corn pit in Chicago on its last trade at 2 o'clock Central Time, 556, up three quarters of a cent. September futures 516 and three quarters, down 8 3/4 in December corn. 512 and three quarters, 9 1/4 lower. March futures 523, down 9 3/4. And the May contract at 528 and three quarters, down 11 3/4. July corn finished the day in the electronic trade at $5.36, down 11 3/4. And next year's December at 517.5, down 9.5 cents. July soybean futures were up three at the end of the day, 1343. Settlement price, actually the last trade in Chicago. August contract 1316.5 in the electronic, down 6 1/4 at 2 o'clock Central. September at 1284.5. Down 9 1/4, November beans, 1258 and three quarters. The harvest month, down 11.5 cents. January futures, 1261 1/4, down 12. And the March contract at 1244 3/4 in the bean pit, 8.5 lower. July bean meal, up $1.80 at 396.30. July bean oil at 48.70, down 50 cents on the afternoon. The live cattle futures finished the nearby contract at 117.70, up 60. The August feeders at 157.37.5, up 57.5, and lean hogs 92.5 cents higher. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures on the afternoon in the July contract at $83.41 a barrel, down $3.12, and the ethanol at $1.97. That's a nickel lower for the day. Natural gas at $2.32 4/10, down 9 8/10. Heating oil at $2.63 7/10, 6.5 cents lower. And the gold futures on the day up $57.90 an ounce at $1,620.50. The CRB index at 268.34, down 4.6 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area. Yet this afternoon, sunny skies, a high of 65 degrees on a northwest wind at 16 miles an hour, gusting to 24. Outside the studios now, just 57 degrees, and it is cloudy, partly cloudy this evening, a low of 51. And then tomorrow, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, partly sunny, a high of 70 degrees. Saturday night, cloudy and 54. Sunday, sunny skies and 80 degrees on a west wind, and Sunday night, partly cloudy, with a low of 62. Monday, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Should be partly sunny with a high of 82. Monday night, mostly clear, and a low of 60. Tuesday, sunny and a high near 80. Tuesday night, mostly clear with a low of 59 degrees. Wednesday, mostly sunny skies, a high near 79. And Wednesday night, partly cloudy and a low of 59 degrees. By the time we get to Thursday of next week, sunny skies and a high near 80 degrees. Hey, have you been to our website to sign up for our Follow the Corn bus tour yet? I hope so, but if not, you can find all the details at willag.org. That's willag.org for $800. We'll take you all the way to New Orleans and back and give you a four-night stay. One of those at Harrah's in Tunica. Two of them will happen in the French Quarter at the Dolphin. And then on the way back, we'll stop at Beale Street in Memphis. We'll see Dan Zwicker and John Bondurant along the way, too.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon, as usual, on the phone line from Lafayette, Indiana. Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hello, Todd.
Oh, what an ugly week it was in Chicago. And, oh, we closed out the month of May, and it was an outside down day or an outside down month for corn. And then futures tried to rally today and just fizzled out miserably. What happened?
Well, I think the best thing we can say is it could have been a lot worse, even with the wheat pulling the plug. All the longs pulled the plug to about, right around when Europe closed and right around lunchtime in Chicago. We saw the longs jump out. I think there were several reasons for this, pushing us down almost 5% on the day. Corn didn't hold, and I think that was thanks to really no confirmation of some rumors that China was going to purchase some corn. That came out shortly after the pit trade opened up. Also, the negative weekly export sales, I think, caught up with the market eventually. The wheat came in with a negative number for old crop, and we didn't trade that initially, and I was nervous that that might have to come back around and be traded. I think that was indeed part of the reason. I think probably the biggest reason out there, Todd, goes back to these outside markets. We saw a really poor close in Europe, some major technical supports right around the 206, 208 euro level for the Paris wheat broke on the close. I think that was especially hard on U.S. sentiment, and I think that European close goes back to the new lows in the equities, the new lows in the crude oil at about the same time that Europe was closing. And then I think finally it seemed to me, the last hour of trade, a harvest pressure Friday. Harvest pressure entered, and the trade got to the realization that we were indeed harvesting. And I think the yields, although they're not great, and what I'm hearing is a lot of mixed bag yields, and probably the worst areas have not started cutting yet. They'll probably start in earnest this next week or this coming weekend, depending on the rain. I think the trade probably wanted to take some extra premium out in case yields continue to be a little bit better than what they expected them to be.
Are we seeing a bit of a domino effect? And follow with me and tell me whether I'm right or wrong on this. So Europe has been in trouble for the better part of a year. Asia, China, is its primary, is the place where it gets most of its goods and some of its services, I think.
Right.
And then, of course, we provide agricultural products to China and other parts of Asia. So is this just backing into us through those routes? Is that a safe assumption?
I think partly. I think the vast majority, and I'll put it this way, I feel like about 85 to 90% of the grain trade this week was outside market related, not supply-demand fundamentals related. I think that the big question, maybe we can hit this more on commodity week, but the big question I think sits at the table now is we've had this huge price break. I think it's been mostly investment, money fleeing the commodities and going to the dollar, going to the U.S. bonds. I mean, we hit a 1.4%. 10-year note, so you essentially guarantee yourself a loss with inflation if you buy bonds right now, yet we're buying them hand over fist. And so we saw the Chinese PMI data come out this morning before the pits opened. The manufacturing for new orders was at 48.4. When you go below 50 by that much, that says they're actually in a declining economy. Their manufacturing is actually on the downhill slide. So I think the investment demand is seeing this and seeing the economic data coming out from the United States and saying there's no reason to be long commodities because we're going to see commodity investment continue to decline. Now the question becomes, with this price break, do we bring the export market back? And I guess if there was a silver lining in today's trade, when I saw both corn export sales and bean export sales over 60% under their four-week average and we had that negative number in wheat, I saw those numbers and I thought, oh my gosh, we could be limit down given what the outside markets are doing, yet the bull spreads kick back into gear. So now I think we have a window of opportunity here for the end users, the export market, to say the supply is not assured because the rains haven't come like they should. The market has fallen substantially. Even the outside markets are probably getting to a value level. maybe I, being an end user, should start to buy more. So this is what we look for, I think, in the next 2 weeks between now and the June 12th report. We look to see if demand comes back in. If it does, I think that really can change the medium-term trend and averts this issue that the outside markets is actually killing agricultural commodity demand.
End users on the export market are far different than those domestically, and you would be talking to many of them. Are you of the same mind for them that they might be willing to get into the marketplace to purchase their inputs?
The domestic ones, you mean, Todd?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's why your interior basis has hung up so well. I think the domestic market, if there's a key difference between the two, I think the export market still wonders if farmers are holding a large percentage of their 11 crop. I think the domestic market has come to the realization and opinion, and I share this opinion, that by and large, there's probably not much more than 10, 15, maybe 20% of the 11 corn still left out there. And so I found it very interesting. It was just Wednesday that Reuters did a story, and it was a very good story. It was very detailed that Asian buyers are now turning to corn as wheat prices have rallied too much and the spreads have widened. So here we go back to what you talked about with Jerry Banging at Commodity Week, and this goes back to our initial thoughts. Did we rally the wheat so fast after the last report by USDA? They're going to have to revisit the feed demand issue again, and I think we're starting to see that in the export market, and I think, yes, even in the domestic market, by the basis in the interior being so strong, the interior guys in the domestic markets are saying, I might have to shut down if the prices get out of hand like they did last year, but I don't think the farmer has a lot left of last year's crop.
Wait, so basically you're telling me not much left for corn.
Right.
And that wheat's been outpriced, so it wouldn't be even domestically be used.
Right.
So you're looking at a pretty good-sized rally. Whether or not there's a weather problem in sometime maybe in late June or July?
I think what I would classify your rally as, it would be short-term if the weather was good. I think it could be medium-term and a move up, a general trend move up into harvest, if we can get the export demand back on this price break.
All right. Anything else to add before I let you go?
I think that'll do it. We'll talk to you later.
Hey, thank you so much.
Okay, Todd.
That is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. In fact, he will be back later, at least here. He'll be on our Commodity Week program along with Jackie Bakes and Pete Manhart. Emerson Napsicker will be our guest on that program.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Sean Powers is here now with a look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, a federal jury has sided against ConAgra Foods, Inc. and a contractor in awarding $180.8 million in damages to three men injured in a 2010 grain elevator explosion in southern Illinois. Jurors in East St. Louis deliberated about 10 hours after a month-long deliberation before returning a verdict today favoring Minnesotans John Lentz and Robert Schmidt. The third plaintiff was John Becker, whose hometown wasn't immediately available. The lawsuit alleged the men were removing equipment from a grain bin in April 2010 at the ConAgra-owned site in Chester when it exploded into flames. Jen sustained burns over roughly three-quarters of his body. Officials with Nebraska-based ConAgra say the accident was tragic, but the company doesn't agree with the verdict or damages. ConAgra plans to appeal. About 15% of Indiana is experiencing a moderate drought, with abnormally dry weather conditions covering half of the state. Weather experts say rain that's expected in the next few days won't bring significant relief to the region. Purdue University agricultural professor Bob Nielsen says some of the corn and soybean crops are already showing signs of drought stress. While he says rain yesterday helped conditions, he worries problems will continue.
Many fields around the state were beginning to roll their leaves. It's a kind of wilting of the plant. And there's also been reports of plants were at a much younger growth stage in the past week or so, that there may in fact have been some mortality of plants in these fields and therefore a reduction in the plant population.
Nielsen says the earliness of this particular drought is unusual. Meanwhile, agricultural experts say vegetables that are well established and well irrigated in the state are thriving. In Illinois and in other parts of the country, the emerald ash borer continues to be a menace, as trees are being cut down to prevent the beetle from spreading. The small, metallic green insects have decimated ash trees across the country. Phil Nixon is an extension entomologist at the University of Illinois. He says moving firewood is one way the bugs get around.
When you go to buy firewood, look for a badge-like seal on the container that says it's been treated or been known to be free of insects. That's becoming more and more common. That's due to recent regulations to try to stop some of this movement.
While some ash trees can be treated from the emerald ash borer, Nixon cautions homeowners that because of the infestation, having ash trees in a yard can actually lower a home's value. The insects have been reported in more than 20 counties in Illinois. And state officials in Illinois have approved plans for a large-scale hog farm in McDonough County, despite objections from some neighbors about odors and potential pollution. The farm could handle around 18,000 hogs in 5 buildings. Officials say the facility is expected to create 20 permanent jobs. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Sean. Sean Powers is with Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Well, up next, we'll ask ag economist Daryl Good what farmers should do, if anything, about pricing new corn and soybeans. Prices, of course, have fallen dramatically from earlier this year. Now they're facing much lower prices for corn. Not unexpected, of course, when we were in February and setting prices for crop insurance, but maybe they didn't do anything about it, which is quite likely. What should their plan of attack be?
Yeah, I think, you know, anecdotal evidence suggests that there has not been a lot of new crop corn priced. Prices starting the calendar year were relatively low and have continued to decline, and I think farmers have been reluctant to sell into that price decline. And so what do you do now that we're 50 cents below the insurance price and looks like really no relief in sight unless it's kind of a weather scenario here as we move into the heart of the growing season? And that's certainly a possibility. And my thinking is there's probably room for at least some weather rallies as we go through June, July, and into August. We've not had a perfect start to the season. We're still in a very warm trend. We've been experiencing above average temperatures for the last 8 months. Looks like some high temperatures are going to return after the current round of cooler weather. I'm thinking now we don't get real aggressive at these prices, although recognizing that if the summer goes well, and we do get this huge corn crop, eventually prices will be cheaper than what they are now. But I think the challenge now is to pick some times during this summer growing season to become more aggressive about new crop pricing.
Soy complex?
Kind of a similar situation. I think the expectation has been that reduced acreage here following a very small crop in South America would maintain soybean prices at very robust levels, and in fact they are. I mean, we've come down a dollar and a half, but we're still, when you look at new crop soybean, November beans, $12.50 or a bit higher, still from a historic standpoint, very high prices. But I think soybeans currently are probably reacting more negatively to the world economic situation than corn is. I mean, China being a huge player in the soybean market and concerns about economics in general with a weaker dollar, lower crude oil prices. I think soybeans have always been more sensitive to those so-called outside markets, and we're seeing that right now. But still, underlying consumption is going to remain large on soybeans. South American supplies will get increasingly smaller as we move into the fall of the year, and demand will come exclusively to the U.S. And so I'm thinking, you know, the combination of a high rate of consumption, some weather glitches during the summer, we're still going to get some spikes in soybean prices and overall probably maintain soybean prices at a relatively higher level than corn prices. So I don't think we should be in a panic mode by any means, but certainly be looking for some opportunities as we go into July and August.
That's University of Illinois ag economist Darrell Good. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Have you visited our website yet at willag.org? I hope so. It's willag.org. There you'll find all of our daily agricultural programming, a way to sign up for our Follow the Corn bus tour. Look under the picture of Dave and me. And, of course, Commodity Week. It's our weekly look at what happened in the world of agriculture. Our guest this week will be Emerson Napsiger, extension agronomist from the University of Illinois. In fact, I caught up with Emerson a bit this morning. We'll preview what he has to say for this afternoon's program of Commodity Week. We talked about the dry weather conditions and whether or not it really has had an impact yet on the corn crop in the state of Illinois. The Illinois corn crop was put into the ground about 3 weeks ahead of schedule this year, and that's just about how the weather's been acting. The month of May was the fifth warmest on record in Illinois, with just 57% of the normal rainfall amounts. Still, the corn crop, when compared to the bellwether year of 2004, is doing better than it did in that record-setting good year. It doesn't mean much, thanks to University of Illinois Extension agronomist Emerson Napsiger.
Well, we've had good crop ratings before. I went back to 1988, and they were very high at the end of May in 1988. And, of course, we ended up with the lowest yield we've had in the last 30 years. I guess the quick answer is the crop ratings don't mean very much. The correlation certainly between the ratings at the end of May or early in the season and final yield is certainly not very good at all.
What is good this year is how the Illinois corn crop has gone into the ground. It's tall, green, and beautiful. It looks better than any other year Emerson Napsiger can recall over the last three decades.
We've had some real advantages. Dry springs generally help us get the crop in without mudding it in. We didn't do much soil compaction. Stands are generally pretty good, as we expect them to be when we've planted and we've hadn't gotten the heavy rainfall right after planting. That's our best formula for low stands, and so stands are good in most places. We don't have any drowned out spots, or very few of them. Some people were delayed a little bit in the northern part of the state with rainfall, but all in all, dry springs are pretty positive for getting the crop established, if they're not super dry. So we had enough water to get the crop up, and that's the main thing to get at this point.
However, there are concerns, especially in the driest areas where the root systems have not been able to find moisture. A little rainfall will go a long way to fix that problem.
The growth of the crop right now is a great indicator of how well it's supplied with water. And because we're in Illinois, our soils are capable of providing a lot of water to the crop. So those corn plants that have their roots tapped into the water supply are really in pretty good shape at this point. But obviously, we don't have enough stored water to carry the crop through the whole season. And the real concern is in sort of the next month, is it going to rain and give us a boost in that water supply so we can get the crop through pollination without undue stress?
So a drier spring is not bad news for the corn crop unless it turns into a droughty summer.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. You can find us online at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason, your host. Back in just a couple of minutes, when we'll take a complete look at the weather forecast with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute.
It's Early Bird Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1866, Charles Davenport was born. An American zoologist, he contributed substantially to the science of heredity, and he was a pioneer in the use of statistical techniques in biological research. Also in 1866, American inventor W.H. Richardson was issued a patent for a cotton chopper. In 1875, A.P. Ashbourne received a patent for a process preparing coconut for domestic use. The process involved grating coconut, passing it through a sieve with hot water, and cooking it with hot steam for several hours before pressing it dry. Sugar and cinnamon are then added before packaging. In 1908, John Cron walked over 9,000 miles around the perimeter of the United States with his wheelbarrow. He completed the walk in 357 days, resting only on Sundays. In 1926, the first automatic pop-up toaster was introduced by the Walters Genter Company of Minneapolis, Minnesota. In 1951, the International Cheese Treaty was signed. Its key feature was usage and designation of origin and names for cheeses. And in 1976, Great Britain and Iceland settled their codfish war. And that's this day in agricultural history.
It's a Friday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm your host, Todd Gleason. Be sure to visit our website at willag.org, or if you're on your smartphone, no www in front of this, at m.willag.org. That's m.willag.org. There you'll find our Commodity Week program. We'll post it to the website at about 6 o'clock this evening. We also put it up on AgWeb on Saturday morning, so you can find it in a whole bunch of ways. Commodity Week, it's our weekly look at what happened in the world of the agricultural markets, and since we've closed out the month of May, this should be a good one. Our guests this week will be Emerson Nafziger, state agronomist at the University of Illinois and U of I Extension.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. We have had yet another dry week for much of the state, with record warm temperatures over the Memorial Day weekend. Rainfall was less than a quarter of an inch across much of southern and central Illinois, but locally heavier rains fell in some locations, especially in northern Illinois. In fact, 1 to 2 inches or more were common in some places. Many places reported record or near record high temperatures over the Memorial Day weekend, with highs in the 90s all 3 days. The week ended with much cooler temperatures. Based on preliminary data, the statewide average temperature for May was 68.1 degrees. That is 5.7 degrees above normal and the fifth warmest May on record since statewide records began in 1895. The statewide average precipitation was only 2.4 inches. That's 57% of normal and the 21st driest May on record. The U.S. Drought Monitor now has many areas in Illinois in abnormally dry conditions, while far southern Illinois is in moderate drought. Temperatures are expected to be mild over the weekend, with highs in the 70s on Saturday, low Saturday night in the 50s, and highs in the low 80s on Sunday, and lows in the mid-60s. Next week will be warmer, with highs in the 80s and 90s, and very little chance of rain. In fact, the forecast through June 14th is grim, with above-normal temperatures and below-normal precipitation. I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
Well, that wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report. Be sure to visit our website at willag.org. There you'll find all kinds of information about our Follow the Corn bus tour scheduled for the 20th to the 24th of August. Just 13 seats left on the bus. We will be picking up here in Champaign and at Mount Vernon. Should have a place for your car to be left for that five-day period in both spaces. I know we've got one scheduled here in Champaign. No need to worry about it. The Follow the Corn bus tour, a great way to see what the export facility that long looks like in New Orleans that belongs to CGB Enterprises. We'll stop and talk with Dan Zwicker and John Bondurant along the way, too. You can find all the details at WILLAG.org. You have a really good weekend, and be sure to visit our website at willag.org for Commodity Week after 6 o'clock Central Time this evening.